like no fear at last. These are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Kaho Matsui, Pan American, Macy Stewart, Circuit AU, so many more. But this week, I am so excited to have on Greg Davis, AKA, for purposes this week, the record coming out, Asterisk. Greg and I go way back. I'm pretty sure Curling Pond Woods was the first time I wrote about his music, which was back 2004, so over 20 years ago. We're the old guys now. And just always been a big fan of his work and the wide variety of types of music he's always made. And the sound worlds he's explored. I was lucky enough back in the Digitalis days to put out the first Full Spectrum project or Full Spectrum tape, which remains a favorite. It's like perfect ambient music, if you ask me. But coming up this week on his self-released label, I guess it's on Autumn Records, is No School by Asterisk. Asterisk is his sort of beats hip hop project, I guess you'd say. And yeah, I mean, he just made a legit badass hip hop record. It's got a bunch of different, I think 15 different MCs. And it's so cool. Like, and we talk about this on the show, but like he was saying, you know, I'm turning 50 or maybe he just turned 50 and it's like, fuck it. You know, and I feel that energy. So I turned 50 in 4 years. So maybe I'm going to maybe I need to start a punk band. Maybe that's what I need to do. I don't know. Anyway, No School is out May 2nd. So this Friday, huge, huge, huge recommendation. It's such a fun record. It's such a killer record. And yeah, we didn't do an all hip hop episode, probably could have, but we didn't. But this is a lot of fun anyway, so hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a composer, a beat maker, a producer, a record store owner with multiple locations, as we were discussing. It's Greg Davis. Welcome to the show.
Hey, hey.
Thanks so for having me, Brad. What's it like having two locations now? How insane is that?
It's crazy. So, you know, I opened Autumn Records in Winooski, Vermont about 8 years ago. And so that's been running, you know, chugging along for a while now. And I never had like plans or ambitions to open a second location. But about a year ago, I had a opportunity come up in Waterbury, Vermont, which is about, you know, 30 or 40 minutes from Burlington, or from where I live. And it was just kind of like too good to pass up. Yeah. So I kind of partnered with someone who was sort of like renovating and opening like a multi-use space. And he was like, let's put a record store in here. And so we worked on it together.
So how do you split your time?
Well, I'm just in the Winooski shop. Okay. You know, I have, two employees who kind of hold the fort down for me. And then I'm in and out, you know, like almost every day I, you know, go in for a few hours or whenever I need to do work. But, the Waterbury location, that was part of the setup, was that they're going to help staff it. So nice. I only have to go down there, you know, basically to take records and inventory and stuff. And, so it's a good situation. It's really nice.
That's awesome. I have no concept of how far apart this stuff is. Isn't Waterbury? So
Vermont's a pretty small state. So
yeah, nothing's that far. Is it? So I mostly stopped drinking a few years ago, but like back, yeah. I, Isn't that sort of like the way towards like Hill Farmstead and stuff?
Yeah, well, Hill Farmstead's in like the northeastern part of Vermont. It's called the Northeast Kingdom, and it's just like Hill Farmstead's crazy. It's just like way out in the middle of fucking nowhere.
It's like an actual farm.
Yeah, it, literally, it's just farmland. You're driving through like, you know, nothing, and then all of a sudden there's this farm and a brewery there, and people like travel there from all over the place. Yeah, great spot, and you know, amazing beer and stuff. So, Vermont beer. I mean, I think beer in general is kind of like had its day, but you know, Vermont's still a big place for that.
Yeah. If I ever, like I said, even though I've mostly stopped drinking, if I ever get out that way, like I have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make the trip, but
we'll have to go, man.
Anyway, enough about
enough about beer. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Beer that I don't really drink. So you've got a new record as Actress coming out on May 2nd.
No yeah.
What, like, I mean, this project has been, it's first started a while ago, right? I mean, we were just talking about how old we are and how like, all our stuff has to go to anniversaries, but like, why this record? Why now? Like, why was now the time? Like, why do you want to do it now?
Well, yeah, there's, I mean, a few reasons. Like, so, you know, just going like way, way back when I first started making music in the 90s, in, you know, when I was in high school. Some of the first stuff I was making was, you know, beats and rapping and stuff and just making shit in my basement with my friends. And I had like a cheap sampler and turntables and a, you know, 4-track cassette recorder and used to like, you know, make stuff and make weird collages and things. So that kind of like, that's my genesis. I was a huge, huge hip hop fan from like, you know, like 1988 to 95, you know, like that like insanely incredible era,
right?
That music was so exciting for me, and I grew up out in the burbs of Chicago, so I kind of got, you know, got the the wind of it from Chicago. And so lifelong love of mine, like deeply rooted, you know, in my music. But you know, and then I went off to college and grad school and started making super weird electronic music and drone music and ambient stuff and all that. But, you know, I'd say like in the last, like, I don't know, maybe 10 years, I started making beats again as just kind of a fun side project, you know, be working on an album or, you know, a lot of my other music and just for fun and be like, oh, cool. Let me make a beat, loop it up, you know, like just, I've always had fun with that stuff. And it's just like a different mode of working and stuff. And, you know, I've always loved sampling and things like that. So like basically, you know, about a year or so ago, I kind of like went through all the beats I'd been making over the last while and kind of compiled a little beat tape and put it on Bandcamp and just for fun. And I was like, yeah, this was pretty good. And then, you know, the wheels started turning and I was like, you know what? I've always wanted to make like a record with like real MCs. You know, just something I've wanted to do since I was in high school, you know, and, so kind of a few things happened. Well, one thing is, you know, I've been like really inspired by like the hip hop underground in the last 10 or 15 years. There's like so much good shit going on, amazing music. And, so that kind of was inspiring me to get back into it as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just started reaching out to people, you know, on the indie level that I just liked. I liked what they were doing. And a lot of people who are just like on Bandcamp or just put stuff up on streaming. And, so I was like, hey, you want to work with me? You want to make a track together? And some people were like, yeah, cool, man. And some people didn't respond at all. And some people asked for like thousands of dollars, you know? So it kind of like, I slowly, you know, built up a roster of, you know, MCs and connections. And, then I was just sending beats to people and then they would record a verse and send it back. And it took about a year and a half to kind of like piece everything together on the record and make it sound like a cohesive record with, you know, with all the different people. I think there's 20 MCs on there. And man. You know, it's a lot of, it was a crazy, I've never made a project like that before. Just the amount of, you know, kind of work and,
right,
you know, back and forth and waiting for people to finish something. And then all the process of like mixing the record took a really long time too, just to make everything sound kind of consistent.
Yeah. I'm just imagining what the workflow must have been like. Mm-hmm. Like all those moving, I can't even.
Hard to keep track of everything. I had to be very like organized with all of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, yeah, I can imagine like, God, like 30-year dream come true kind of thing.
It's yeah, kind of you surreal. Know, it was like, yeah, it's like kind of like, I don't know. I'm turning 50 this year. This is like, fuck yeah. It, why not, man? You right. know, make a hip hop record and
fuck yeah.
It just felt like a good time to do that. And I felt like my musical energy was really like kind of. I was feeling really excited about making that music. And mm-hmm. this is like the most fun I think I've ever had making a project, God, even awesome. Though, you know, it took forever, but, it's so much fun. I love yeah. it. You know,
I do feel like something I've been thinking about a lot with, I don't know. I mean, I make a lot of music and do a lot of stuff and
yeah,
it's fun on a certain level, but like, there's just something to just like, yeah, this like pure, like joy, fun, like you're talking about. I think I forget that more often than I should when I'm working on things.
Right.
Like, no, this should be fun. Like if I'm, you know, I don't know. I appreciate like the fact that you just leaned into it and like,
oh, yeah. I'm just kind of like at this point in my life, you know, like I don't even know what it means to like put out records or, or make music. I mean, I know what it is to make music,
sure. but
you know, it's just kind of like, I don't know what it means to like, you know, make a record and put it out there anymore. It doesn't make sense to me, but
right.
So now I'm just like, I'm going to just follow the things that I feel really inspired by or, you know, excited about or passionate about and just do mm-hmm. it, you know. And then, you know, I'm still going to put it out in the world. And if no one sure. notices, that's fine. But, you know, that's it's more for me, if anything, you know.
Right. Yeah. No, that's cool. Yeah. I'm also just kind of curious, like, I think No School is such an awesome title. I'm curious, like, if there is a story behind or what the title means to you kind of thing.
Not really. I mean, it just kind of, it came about like kind of towards the beginning of the project. I think I just kind of like landed on it. And I kind of felt like I was sort of straddling this kind of like older school approach with like, you know, sampling and beat making, but then a newer school, you know, approach with some of the MCs I was working with. And also, you know, you probably heard it here that I'm bringing in a lot of my other kind of like just all this stuff that I've done right. over the last 20, 25 years, computer music and ambience yeah. and drones and sound collaging. And so it just felt like a good bridge, you know, it's like neither here nor there, you know, it's right. somewhere in the middle or none at all, you know?
Yeah, no, that's like, that's one of the things that really jumped out at me is how, because obviously we knew each other through more experimental music, whatever. Yeah. And it was like, oh yeah, this is like hearing all these things that like in this like hip hop context was, I think it's great. And you know, that's what I've had this conversation with people before. I tell people like some of the weirdest, most experimental, quote unquote, experimental music that's been happening the last 15 years is in hip hop.
Yeah. I know there's some crazy shit going it's like, on. It's cool. What's funny is that, I'm coming in like there's, you know, hip hop producers and MCs that are like, they started more like in the tradition and they're taking it way out, right. you know, and they're making like fucking noise music now or you know, crazy right. shit. And I'm like, I feel like I'm in the opposite direction. Like I'm actually like pulling back my more like experimental right. tendencies. I'm like, I just want to make like funky tracks that you're like nodding your head to, you know, and stuff like that. So it's funny, like I was trying to find yeah. a balance, you know, because there are a couple tracks on the album that are, you know, that lean more into the kind of experimental world. But mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I'm not going to go all the way there, but you know, maybe some right. of that stuff will move there eventually. But it's also just part of like the sampling and stuff that I do. It's just like I kind of gravitate towards these things that, you know, are a little more like groovy and spacey or whatever. So
yeah. Before we get into the questions, and since this is kind of related, but not any like particular, what are some of your particular favorite like hip hop records?
Well, I have a bunch, but, you know, I think in recent years, obviously, you know, some of my favorite shit is like all the Backwoods Studio stuff. So, you know, Billy Woods and Arm & Hammer and that whole crew. I mean, they're just they're just putting out consistent, you know, consistently like forward music. As far as like modern producers, I would say Child Actor is my favorite. He's been producing a lot of stuff for a lot of those guys. He did a lot of the like Previous Industries record. I don't know if you heard that last year. That was a big one for me. And I was like super honored to work with Open Mike Eagle and Video Dave on this record.
Yeah.
They've been super cool with me. And then, you know, I have a whole like list of like old school stuff that I still love, you know, but yeah, there's so much stuff like, you know, basically like all the people that are on my record, you know, they all have records that, you know, that, I got super into and just really liked what they were doing. So,
yeah, I've been using it as like there's a bunch of people I'm familiar with on your record, but then there's ones I'm not. And I'm like, okay, cool. This is just like a roadmap of new stuff to dig into. So,
yeah, once I start diving in and kind of like reaching out to people, then you just, you know how it goes. It's just like the branches that go out into all these kind of micro worlds and, and just finding so many cool people. And, you know, you know, it's weird, like people all over the place. And like a lot of these guys are like super young. It's awesome. It's super inspiring. Yeah. You know, I'm like, you know, I think a couple guys on the record aren't even 20 yet. It's just like, this is fucking awesome. You know, like,
so cool.
Let's just make some cool music together, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that remains with all of this music. That's like my favorite thing is just following all those different leads and I don't know, and seeing where you end up, and you find like the coolest shit in unexpected places. And well, I think it's an awesome record, and I'm so stoked that you did this. Like,
okay, thanks,
I turned 50 in 4 years, so I gotta think of something. I don't know how to make a hip-hop record, but I'm like, all right, I like, my roots were in like punk bands and stuff. I'm like, I gotta start a punk band when I'm 50, I guess.
Yeah, why not? I just it's just like get to that point where it's like, okay, I'm just gonna do whatever I want to do. I'm psyched. The record comes out May 2nd. I pressed up vinyl on Autumn Records, just doing it myself, and so I'm excited to get the whole record out there and let people hear it, and it'll be Bandcamp vinyl and then streaming later on. So
awesome.
Yeah,
awesome. All right, well, moving into the meat of why we're here.
Yeah.
As always, to begin, what is the first song that you remember, Greg Davis?
All right. So I really wanted to do like an all hip hop list, but I decided to just go like, I think I heard on a lot of other interviews, you like, a lot of people were just like, yeah, this is kind of like intuition, first thought, you know, this is like impossible to answer a lot of these things, but. So I just went with like real solid, you know, just
off songs the top of your
head kind
of
hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So first song I remember is, this is fucking crazy, man. And you're probably not going to believe me, but it's Stevie Wonder, Sir Duke.
Holy shit.
So I don't even know if this is real or not, but I think it is. And I stick to it.
Yeah.
And I've talked to my mom about it. I remember hearing Sir Duke playing on a boombox when it came out, and I was only 1 year. I was only one.
Whoa.
I was like a fucking baby, basically. And I still have this weird image of the sliding glass door with the boombox, and the boombox was playing into the backyard, and I was like probably just rolling around in the grass or something and hearing Sir Duke. And I was, you know, I was born in 75. I think Sir Duke came out in 76 or, you know, close thereby. And so I have this memory from that. And it was a house we lived in for like 1 year, and then we moved to a different house. I also have a memory of a babysitter picking me up out of the crib, which is fucking crazy. So,
man,
it could be a dream, you know, it could all be a dream. I don't know, but that's what I stick to, that one.
I mean, I feel like if there's like a thing you're going to remember when you're one, like Stevie Wonder would be one of those things, you know, like,
yeah. And I've loved, I completely loved Stevie Wonder ever since. You know, he's like one of my all-time favorites. You know?
One of the greatest.
Yeah.
Ever. This song, man, this is, I kind of thought this would be like song that puts you in a better mood, because this song just puts a smile on my face.
It's I mean, that, like, works for that too. Yeah.
It's, yeah. And then they're, oh God, it's so good. Those breakdowns, like,
yeah, the horn lines and everything.
Sick. And it's about like Duke Ellington and shit. Like,
that's, yeah, it's about all the jazz greats and whatnot. Like, but yeah, great song and great album. You know, like, what can you say? I mean,
I'm just imagining, like,
we're talking about like great songs, great songwriters. Like, Stevie is.
Yeah, right, top of the mountain. Yeah. I'm just imagining like a baby rolling around in the grass, like,
It hit me, man.
All right. Well, what's a song that either makes you cry, makes you feel that kind of way, if it doesn't actually make you cry?
Well, a song that actually has made me cry, you know, it probably hit at just the right time. It's a little bit of a, you know, little sappy, sentimental song, but I love it. It's Simon and Garfunkel's Song for the Asking.
Oh man, yeah.
Yeah. It's a really short, beautiful song that ends Bridge Over Troubled Water, like the album. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. It starts with like applause from a crowd, so it sounds like it's a live song, but that's not, you know, and then it goes into this tune. It's just a sweet, you know, sweet song, mostly Paul Simon. And you know, I've always liked the lyrics of that one. So, that's one.
This is right up there. So, like, in my mind, like, I don't know, like, best song, like, one of the greatest songs under 2 minutes is Bless the Telephone.
Yeah.
But this is up there, too. It's like these, because it's like, just it's a like short, minute and a half. And
God. It's such a, and it's weird that that's, like, what they chose to, like, end the album with, too.
You know,
it's such an interesting choice that. Just this short little sweet little song. But maybe, you know, maybe they were kind of like, it was kind of like goodbye, you know, this is the end of Simon and Garfunkel. Cause that was the last, you know, song on their last album or whatever. But
yeah, dang. I'm guessing I kind of know the answer to this based on there's like another answer, but are you like a big Paul Simon fan?
Yeah, I am. I love Paul. You know, a lot of, he gets some hate, you know, here and there, but been a big Paul Simon fan, you know, since I was a kid. Simon and Garfunkel, and then, you know, his solo stuff, and I've always loved his music. So yeah, and there is another one of his things on here, which is important to me. So
okay, well, what is a song that always puts you in a better mood in addition to Sir Duke?
You know, could be number two, this one. Michael Jackson, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. I mean, just like, what a banger.
God, it's just endless grooves. Just
like
pure.
That whole album, Off the Wall, is just one of the most like well-played, well-produced records. It just sounds so fucking good. Everyone playing on it's incredible. Michael Jackson sounds incredible. I actually use Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. I use that to test stereo equipment at my shop. That's like the song. I know it's so, they always say pick a song that you know really well.
Yeah.
And then you can tell if anything's fucked up or weird or whatever. So I use that every time. You know, just like, because it's got like the full range. You know,
I was going to say, like, you know it really well, and it's got everything you could need to check.
Yeah. So,
and Sheila E. just ripping it on.
Oh, there, God. Like, yeah. Yeah. All the cool percussion stuff going on, and then obviously like the Quincy Jones, you know, arrangements and things. It's like so good. So that always puts me in a good mood. Even I've heard it thousands of times.
Oh, yeah.
Point, you know,
and it's like one of those songs that, I don't know, I feel like there's never a bad moment to put it on. Like, even if, I don't know, even if I was at a funeral or something, it's like someone put this on. It's like, man, it's gonna.
Yeah, time to celebrate. Maybe,
right. You know? Like, maybe that's a bad idea. I don't know. I haven't tried it, but. I'm probably not going to, but yeah, that whole, and yeah, Off the Wall is one of the greatest things ever,
all time.
Man, just even thinking about this song makes me want to like get up and
shake my ass.
Yeah. Okay, everybody's favorite question: what is objectively the greatest song of all time?
This was impossible, and so
could be, I just, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Yeah, frankly. I know a lot of these could, you know,
yeah,
switch around, but. Yeah, this is impossible. So I just picked one that like I've just loved for so long. And so it's a little bit, it's a little like not a typical answer, but Brian Eno and John Cale, Lay My Love, which is just one of my favorite songs of all time. It's just, it's so good.
As I make notes and all this, my note for this is like, this might be among the greatest songs of all time.
Yeah.
Because it is. It is a perfect song.
It's so good. And it's on such a weird album. Like that album is like, it's good, but it's kind of like strange. And it comes at a weird point in both of their careers, you know?
Right.
But something about that particular song just hits, you know, so hard. And, you know, I love so much of, you know, Brian Eno's work, obviously, is huge for me. And same with Cale. But, man, that song is just, I used to put on every single mixtape I made for anybody.
I mean, it's because it's, I don't know, it's like really weird, but it's also really accessible.
Yeah. And it just, it's so like another song that would put you, could put you in a great mood too, you know, like, just has a cool beat and rhythm and just the melodies are so nice, you know, and, Cale's playing his, you know, viol on there or whatever.
I know, he's just kind of, like shredding. And I was listening to it this morning, it kind of struck me too. I mean, this song's what, 40, 50 years old at this point?
Yeah, I think they made that one in the 80s, like late 80s maybe. Okay, so 40 years old.
It still sounds like if, you know, somebody put this out on a record this year, no one would bat an eye. Like, and that's, I don't know, a kind of, it's just,
It's cool. I like it. You know, it has this, has that kind of like 80s drum machine, you know, as kind of the beat, the background beat on it, which I really dig about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that big sounding, you know, synthetic drum machine sound, which just makes it work so well in that track.
Yeah. God. Mm. Love this song. I'm so glad you picked this. Is this okay, what is a song you used to love but now, like, you heard it recently or think about it now, didn't quite do it for you or hit you the same way?
I kind of had two. I think I gave you one answer and I kind of came up with another answer / album. So John Lennon's Imagine. I know this is gonna sound weird, but like I heard that, you know, you hear it all the time, but I heard it like, I don't know, a few years ago. And I was like, man, I used to love this song. And now I think it's just so corny.
I know it is.
But maybe, you know, it's just like the times we live in or something. And I just, I'm like, it doesn't hit for me anymore.
I had that same experience. And I was just like, shit, am I really this jaded now?
I know.
But it is. It's just, I don't know.
And, you know, it's been overplayed, and I try not to ever let, like, that kind of stuff, you know, ruin songs that I like or whatever, you know, but, I was just like, I don't think I like this song anymore. And then the other one, this might be a little controversial because I know it's super popular, is the Nirvana Unplugged album. I heard that, I listened to that again, like, pretty recently. I was like, I do not like this album. And it's popular, man. I sell so many copies of that at my shop still. Wild. And I'm just like, I don't like it, you know. And I was never like a huge, huge Nirvana fan. I liked them okay, you know, in the 90s and stuff. But that one, I can't hang with it anymore. So
I haven't listened to that in so long. I'm gonna have to listen to that this week, because I like, Nirvana was huge for me. Like, it hit the right. Like, Nevermind came out when I was in sixth grade, so it was like perfect timing.
Totally. But,
it was a couple of years ago. I put In Utero on, because I don't know. I try not to like play stuff for my kid. I don't want to be that person who's like, I try to sneak it sometimes.
Yeah, I do the same thing with my daughter. So
yeah, and but like I remember putting on, and from like that one held up for me at that point. I was like, dang, this is better than I expected it to be. So I'm curious. I don't know how much I ever loved the Unplugged thing. Like,
yeah.
The Lead Belly cover was like that was a whole thing. But
yeah, that's the thing. I think I was like, okay, the Nirvana that I do like is the very like raw, you know, raw energy stuff, you know, and that, I think that was the stuff I liked back in the day. And then now hearing like them try to do something like soft and sensitive, it just like doesn't work, you know?
It's like, yeah, that's not you. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting that you sell a lot of those though.
Oh man. Sell so much Nirvana. And I don't know, you probably see this too, man. I don't know how old your kids are, but there's kids just wearing Nirvana shirts all over the place. It's crazy.
Oh,
you know, one they of my, saw them at like Old Navy and shit. It's wild.
Yeah, one of my daughters a couple years ago, like one of her friends came over and was wearing a Nirvana shirt, and I said something, and of course her friend was like, had no idea what Nirvana was.
Yeah. but it makes sense, you know, like our generation, we grew up with Nirvana, so now our kids are getting into Nirvana. You know, it's like it was like, you know, for our parents, it was like us getting into like the Beatles or something, or Hendrix, you know.
Yeah.
That, you know, that 30 year, whatever that 30 year gap is, you know.
Right. And now my kid is the weird kid like I was explaining Nirvana to her friends.
Or, yeah.
Like my favorite recent story. So my kid, she's in sixth grade, and she started an orchestra this year playing the cello.
Nice.
And during March Madness, her teacher did like a March Madness bracket for some of his favorite compositions and had the kids vote on them.
Yeah.
And one was 4 minutes, 33 seconds.
Oh, which man.
Kind of blew my mind that he, you know, and her whole class, like, and she was familiar with it because she was like telling me, yeah, I was explaining to these kids, like, no, just sit and listen. Every collection. I'm like, oh my God, my kid is explaining John. I was like, I don't know if this means I've succeeded or failed as a parent.
Yeah.
That's the kind of shit I was
doing. At least she could, you know, defend John Cage for you.
Right. Well, and then I was like, well, did you vote for that? She's like, oh God, no.
Yeah, no.
Like, why would I vote for this crap?
She's like, no, but I understand what it's about, you know?
Yeah, I understand you care about this, but I just want to like rip some Vivaldi or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what is the song that most people hate, whoever these people are, but you don't care, you love it anyway?
Actually, another one where I sent you one answer and then I thought of some other stuff, but Jerry Rafferty, Baker Street. Do people hate that song? I don't know. I love it.
It's like the most iconic sax melody ever, right?
You know, yeah, melody. You hear it, you know exactly what it is right away. So I don't know if people hate it, but I love that song. And I love some of the other songs on that album, too. He's like, it's just great stuff. The other answer, this might be a little better, is there are several John Cougar Mellencamp songs that I love that people might hate. You know, some of his hits.
Yeah, there are some John Cougar Mellencamp I love. And if I put them on, my wife will sometimes roll her eyes. She's like, no.
Yeah.
She can hang with a lot of stuff, but for some reason, Mellencamp is like the line. And I'm like, I don't know why.
For some reason, like in recent years, I'm a child of the 80s. Like I love a lot of 80s songs and 80s music, you know, still. But in recent years, I would like, anytime I hear some of those, you know, John Cougar Mellencamp hits, I'm like, you know what? These are fucking good.
I know.
But I'm probably telling you just I'm getting older, you know, just like, yeah, man, cool.
Well, yeah, and it's like, and some of the songs, like, I mean, God, you know, that opening riff for, like, Jack and Diane. I mean, come on. Like, you hear that, and you're just, like, transported. Just
iconic 80s song, you know.
No, I think that's a really good, because I'm right there with you. I love that, but
I know some people are probably hating on that stuff, so.
Yeah, like, oh, fuck John, but man.
And probably the stuff, you know, I have, you know, my least favorite song coming up. So that would be another, that could be something that someone loves, you know, so we'll see.
First of all, do you consider yourself a romantic?
Me? Not really. Okay. I'm a chill guy. I'm thoughtful. And, you know, I like to think I'm thoughtful and caring.
Yeah.
Not necessarily romantic, though.
Fair. What in your world is the most romantic song?
So you probably guessed which one it is, but it's John Coltrane, Say It Over and Over Again from Ballads, his album Ballads. I mean, that's that album, Ballads. And also I would put the John Coltrane and Johnny Hartman record. Those two are, to me, some of the most romantic music.
Totally.
Just beautiful, deep, you know.
Man, it's so, yeah, this, Incredible. I Yeah, it's like a warm hug.
Yeah, that album is just I mean,
that quartet amazing. Is just incredible.
Yeah,
like, yeah. I kind of figured it. I was like, if this isn't the most romantic song, I don't know what this is.
What's it gonna be? Yeah,
it's Baker Street. No,
I know.
Okay, well, what's the song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
This is a good one. The Grateful Dead. That's it for the other one. Sweet, the whole side.
Yeah.
Of Anthem of the Sun. So the story goes like this. You know, in the 90s, when there was kind of that Grateful Dead resurgence, I was in high school. A lot of kids my age were getting into the Dead, you know, at sort of right at the end before Jerry died, going to shows and stuff. And I couldn't stand them. You know, I was like, but a lot of it had to do with like the people who were like following them around and stuff. So totally I was relate. Super turned off. Fast forward, you know, probably 2003-ish. I was living in Chicago again at the time. And I finally was like, okay, I got enough distance here from the 90s. You know, I'm gonna like give the Grateful Dead a try again and try to find my way in, you know? And so I think, I don't know who it was, but somebody recommended, oh, I think you would like Anthem of the Sun, because it's kind of like, you know, it was their second album, but it's maybe one of their weirdest records. Mm-hmm. It has like a lot of weird stuff going on. So that's the one that got me, man. There's like weird sound collage and tape stuff going on and like prepared piano and, you know, and then obviously like all the psychedelic jamming and stuff. So,
right.
So that really did it. And then around that time, I decided to like really dig deep into the Grateful Dead. And I started to like uncover, you know, some of the weirder like sides of the Dead. I made like a whole mix.
Oh, wow.
Grateful Dead mix that's been on the internet for years since around that time. And it highlights all like the weird Dead stuff and weird connections. And then, when I moved to Vermont like 20 years ago, you know, the first like restaurant we went to, it was like a cafe restaurant place. They were playing like a live Dead show. And I was like, I'm here. Oh, yeah, I'm into it, man. You know, like it was fully there at that point, you know, just like, all right. So been a big, you know, it's been 20 something years now, but big Grateful Dead fan. And, you know, love the albums, love the live stuff. And
yeah,
got to see Dead and Company a couple years ago. It was super fun. Oh, nice. So yeah.
Yeah. I had a real similar, when I was in the 90s, like high school, and like I was really into, like, I was into punk and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, oh, fuck the Grateful Dead.
Yeah,
was, like,
you can't be into that.
No.
Yeah. I was into hip hop and stuff. And it was just
And then it was later for me. It was like, I don't know, late 2000s, early 2010s. But, and I think it was this album too for me. It was like, I remember someone's like, no, just, I think you would dig it. Just check it out. And I was like, oh God. And I did. And I really dug. I was like, God damn it.
Damn it. You gotta go listen to the other shit.
I know. Yeah. And it's this whole, it's a whole universe, but
yeah,
I'll have to look up, man. Is that mix still out there somewhere?
Yeah. I'll send it to you. I think it's on my, Mixcloud still, maybe. Okay. Or no, actually I think I got flagged on there. The problem is it's like, you know, these things, I think I have it just on my Google Drive. I'll send you a link to it. But I made one volume, just exploring all the weird stuff. And it's kind of like a collage. It's like a continuous mix of like live and studio stuff. And then I made a second volume like a couple years later after that. So it's fun stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What about are lyrics like an important thing to you? Do you pay attention to lyrics?
So I'm not a lyrics guy, you know. I think you probably hear this a lot. I think I heard some of your other guests say the same thing. You know, I mostly make instrumental music, so and I've always loved instrumental music. But a lot of times when I'm listening to songs, I'm listening to the arrangement, the production, all the different instruments, you know, where they're sitting in the mix, you know, and all the things. So I usually get distracted by, you know, all that stuff, sure. The harmonies, the melodies, just how all the music and the songs are put together and kind of recorded and everything. So
is that lyric, like equally true with like hip hop and like rap, or do you,
that's kind of like, that's a little more equal footing, you know, like, yeah. So but with hip hop, it's like almost like the aggregate, like rhythms and flows and energy, right, of it, you know? So yeah. I do listen to lyrics, but a lot of that's just kind of like, it's coming past you, you know, sure, a little bit faster. But sure. So yeah, for me, it's like lyrics and songs is kind of like, will be this kind of like later or last element that I might dig into. If it's a song that I really like, then I'll,
sure,
you know, then I'll kind of like try to listen up for the lyrics, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So with that, what are your favorite lyrics?
So Beach Boys, Surf's Up. Yeah. It's gotta be it. Man. I mean, Van Dyke Parks just wrote one of the weirdest fucking lyrics for Brian Wilson, and all the other Beach Boys fucking hated it, you know? Yeah. They almost like broke up because of it, you know, like but it's not only is it just one of my favorite songs of all time, it's a beautiful song, but the lyrics are abstract, weird, paint these weird pictures and colors, you know, it's just, it's so good. It's so good.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think someone picked this for, this song comes up a lot.
Okay.
Like understandably, like it's, yeah, one of the, again, what, like, one, oh, of the greatest, yeah, songs. It's like one of the best songs ever, but yeah, I think someone even picked it for a lyrics one. Cause for the same thing, it's just,
yeah,
the lyrics are so good and weird and just, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. They're, just read the lyrics even without the song and you like takes you places.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I tend to like lyrics that are like more suggestive, mm-hmm, and like abstract, that kind of like paint, same, these weird images or pictures. I don't tend to like stuff that's trying to hit you,
right,
hit you right over the head with some, you know, feeling or idea or whatever. Yeah. I like to just kind of like let the lyrics kind of like help paint the picture of the, with the music and the song and everything, just giving like, allow me to have like my, let my imagination kind of, right, roam, you know?
Yeah, totally. totally agree. Yeah. But yeah, Surf's Up.
Oh, Van Dyke Parks, man. Yeah. What a weirdo. Gotta love him.
Yeah. What is the last song you completely fell in love with?
This is a good one. Norma Tanega, I'm the Sky.
Yeah.
She was kind of like a very not well known kind of folk singer songwriter. She only put out two albums really in her life, and she was partners with Dusty Springfield, which is super interesting. But she had a kind of minor hit song called Walking My Cat Named Dog or something like,
yeah,
that, and that's the name of an album that she put out. Mm-hmm. And this song is on there. Just a really cool, you know, folk rock song, but like, she was kind of like into Buddhism and stuff. So it was just kind of like, you know, sneaking these things into, mm-hmm, a pop song, folk song. So that's, you know, I like that album a lot, but that song in particular, I remember, you know, it was a few years ago. I started really getting into that record, and that song just kind of kept on looping, yeah, you know.
Did this get like reissued semi-recently? Yeah. Is that okay?
Yeah, her albums, yeah, that album got reissued, and I think it was one of those records where one of the songs got placed in like a cool show, and then everyone was like, oh, what is this? You know, and so
it
kind of like there was a demand created to like, oh, we gotta find out more about this and reissue it. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I remember, it was only a couple years ago that this first came on my radar, but it was,
yeah,
I don't know, it's like on paper, it's like, yeah, it's like 60s folk rock kind of thing, but there's just something about it that feels different.
And it's kind of like, I think that, yeah, that song's kind of has like a waltz 3/4 feel, just, I don't know, it's great, just got really into it. Yeah. But there's like songs like all the time where, you know, they just snag you, and then
I know,
you just want to listen to them like on loop all day or whatever, playing over and over again
until the next one comes along. And then, what cover song is better than the original?
This could also Double is one of my favorite songs of all time, actually. Nina Simone, Just Like Tom Thumb's Blues. I mean, yeah, God damn incredible. It. I listened to it again the other day, and holy shit. Better than Dylan's version. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, just, she turned it into this, like, super, like, loping, soulful, you know, song. It just, it's incredible. The way the song's like arranged and the way it's, you know, everyone's playing on it. It's just, man, it's the best.
Yeah. It's funny when I was making these questions, like, and had sort of like in my mind, some of them have sort of quintessential answers. Yeah. And I should have thought of this, but I was thinking like All on the Watchtower. Cause that's like an odd, but
yeah, that's a good one too.
But this is like, yeah, like there's a lot of good Dylan covers out there, but this one is on.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is her song now, as far
as I'm exactly. And you know, there's a handful of, like, I feel like song interpreters, you know, people who did a lot of covers. And I, you know, obviously I think Nina Simone is probably number one. I actually put Richie Havens up there as, you know, one of the top people. You know, they didn't write many of their own songs, and so they sang a lot of songs by other people, and but they, the way they interpreted them are just so, like, personal and unique. And so, like, you go through Nina's catalog and it's just, man, there's just so many good cover versions, you know, songs that she sang and picked and interpreted.
Yeah. I mean, and so many times too, where if it's like, you didn't know that they were covering or something, they weren't songs that you would never know because of
It would sound like their own song, you know, like, because just what they put into it. Yeah. And they're not trying to, like, recreate the original version necessarily, you know?
Yeah, which is, to me, I mean, that's always what makes a great cover. Yeah. It's like, why are you just doing the same thing? Like, you're not...
The Nina song, the album that it's from is To Love Somebody.
And it's like all covers,
it's pretty much all covers, and they're all fucking amazing. You know, she does Revolution by the Beatles. Yeah. She does To Love Somebody by the Bee Gees.
There's like two or three other Dylan songs, I think.
Yeah, Dylan. Like, there's the Birds. I think she does Turn, Turn, Turn.
Yeah.
It like every song on that record. That's one of my favorite Nina Simone records. It's just so good.
Well, with that record too, it's like she did like some of those songs. You know, they're like the some of the best known songs by those bands.
Yeah.
But you forget that they're those songs by those bands, which is
right.
You know, that's because she's Nina Simone.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what is the song that means the most to you? Whether not necessarily the song itself, you associate it with something, someone, some experience.
Yeah. So this is a song/album. And it would be, we're coming back to Paul Simon.
Yeah.
Rhythm of the Saints. Super, super important record for me. Just like, I've loved it for a long time, but in particular, it got me through a divorce. So it just like, you know, really saved me at a super low point in my life. So,
man,
I got super obsessed with that record in particular. I actually even, it's still like in progress or just on the shelf, but I started writing a book about that song, about that album.
Oh, so, hell yeah.
Man. You know, maybe someday I'll finish the book about the album. Like a 33 and a third style, you know.
That would be cool. Like, this is it's such an interesting record too. Like, thinking about everybody who plays on it. Like, I mean, Nana Vasconcelos, of course, but who's
all the Brazilian musicians
and all. Like, oh man.
And it's like, you know, I mean, I could talk about this. We could do a whole podcast about this record, but you know what I will say is, like, man, like, how do you follow up Graceland? You know, that's the first thing.
Right.
How the fuck do you follow up a record like that? It was so popular and kind of came out of nowhere. And then he takes a few years, you know, and makes this record. And it's like, it's a little darker. It's a little more like sultry. It's got the more of the Brazilian sound, percussion, you know, and stuff going on. But the song, the lyrics and the songwriting gets a little more like, this is another like lyrics thing. He gets a little more like abstract, where he's kind of like painting images and stuff, and you know, it's kind of like, it's his last good solo album. You know, he doesn't really make anything you know, that's right. Great. After that, you know, he makes a musical after that, and it totally bombs. And then, you know, there's several years after that, and he's still making albums and stuff, but it really was like, I don't know, that was kind of like his last, you know, great work. So I love that one. It hits real deep for me.
Yeah.
Love the whole album.
It's an amazing, right? And like you said, I mean, I think that's a really good, it's like, yeah, how do you, if you make an album like Graceland, if you're lucky and talented enough to make a record of that quality and stat, it's like,
yeah,
this is how you follow it up.
Yeah, why not?
Go to Brazil for a couple years and
yeah. And you know, he was like, you know, he's kind of like, especially when I was kind of like obsessed with this record, he did a good job of like writing about, he was like a guy in his 40s who was going through, you know, relationship stuff, divorce, and he's writing about it, you know, and is writing record for, you know, for people of that age. So, you know, I could understand if younger kids weren't getting into it, and it came, you know, his record, that record came out like in, I think 1989 or 90, when like, that wasn't what was popular at the time, you know, no one cared. And so it was just cool. I don't know. There's a lot of like layers to that record that I really like. And obviously that, as I got older and went through all this stuff, just like totally resonated with me.
Yeah. Great record.
Yeah.
All right. What's your, at least in this moment in time, you know, maybe it changed. What is your favorite song? Or maybe it never changes.
This is my all time favorite song. Okay. Going back to when I was 5 years old.
Oh man.
Christopher Cross's Sailing. So, you know, if it's impossible to choose my favorite song, you got to have some fun with it, you know? So
yeah,
this is a song that I've been listening to, you know, since I was five. So for 45 years, and every time it comes on the radio, I fucking love it.
Dude. I do too, you know what, man.
I, no shame, no nothing. I like fucking love it. It's so good.
It's like that electric 12 string. And you know, I was reading, I had no idea.
12 string, the strings, and all, the whole production of it.
And it just, there's like, it feels like, I mean, not that I have much experience sailing, but it just, you feel like you're kind of floating. Like it feels, but I was reading, apparently it's like, it was the first song to like be recorded digital, or like digital production that went number one.
Oh wow. Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah, that's cool. Weird. I think also, question. I think like it was either that song or maybe it was like Ride Like the Wind, which is also a hit from that album. It was like, he wrote that cause he took acid and like went to Mexico or something, you know? And like the song came out. It was crazy. The other thing I'll say about Sailing is it has the best bridge of any song ever recorded. I fucking love the bridge to that song, man. It's like the weird like jazzy piano chord breakdown thing, and then it goes back into the verse. I mean, that's just one of my favorite bridges of all time.
That is the, you know, maybe it was right, and that's the kind of thing that you come up with when you're on acid in Mexico. Yeah. Well, hey, that's a perfect place to end this. Yeah, so, man. Thanks for doing this. This was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks so much, Brad. It's great to chat with you, dude.
And Asterisk No School out on May Autumn 2nd. Records, everybody get it.
Thanks, man.
Once again, thank you to Greg Davis for taking the time, picking lots of cool songs, and thanks to making this badass Asterisk record. You can hear his picks, link in the show notes. You can pick up Asterisk from his website, or if you live in Vermont or you're going to Vermont, go to Autumn Records, two locations. Amazing. Awesome. As ever, if you enjoy the show, please leave a rating or review. That shit really helps because, you know, algorithmic overlords and all that. You can join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxyjustjealous, for as little as $3 a month. That ongoing support means the world. Thank you to everybody who has signed up. All right, until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.